Like Effect continues on WUWM, I'm Mitch Teich. The idea that pop culture is filled with parables and stories beneath the surface is nothing new. Watch a Warner Brothers cartoon from the 1950s sometime, and you can quickly pick up that there's often more than Bugs Bunny getting the best of Elmer Fudd. But a couple of Wisconsin writers say political theory is also at the heart of much in pop culture. Joseph Foy uses the long-running cartoon The Simpsons as his jumping-off point for the book Homer Simpson Ponders Politics, Popular Culture as Political Theory. Foy is the book's co-editor. Dean Kowalski authored a chapter on Star Wars and how it exemplifies Plato's political philosophy. They joined Lake Effect's Dan Harmon in the studio recently, and Foy explained why The Simpsons was such an appropriate starting point.
Well, actually, so Timothy Dale, the co-editor of this book, he was kind of joking that, you know, here we have now the third book in this Homer Simpson series, and he said neither one of us has ever actually been written about The Simpsons, and so he wanted to make sure that that he wanted to focus his chapter on the Aristotelian elements that are present within The Simpsons. And in particular, what he does is he moves it away from just looking at or focusing on just the Simpson family or the key characters in The Simpsons and actually begins to look at the way in which the community of Springfield, as it's represented in The Simpsons, really does depict a number of Aristotelian elements from the divided soul principle to aspects of the kind of the return theory within with some Aristotelian politics. And so in that aspect, it's actually in looking at community and looking at identity and in looking at the town of Springfield as being the central element within all of the sort of longstanding, the now many years that The Simpsons has been on the air, as being the kind of key way in which we can learn about Aristotelian aspects of politics.
Another aspect or two aspects that caught my eye were the ideas of virtue and order, that those were ideas from Aristotle about politics, those were things that politics are meant to instill in society, were virtue and order, among other things, of course.
Yeah, so, and that's really then where he talks about the importance of the community order as being a key element within The Simpsons. And there are these kind of moments almost where the writers, the producers of The Simpsons, you know, almost give a nod to that kind of idea. So when, for example, one of the things that he talks about is an episode called The Principal and the Pauper, where it turns out that Principal Skinner is actually just an imposter, that he took over his former Sergeant Skinner's identity after Sergeant Skinner disappeared in the war. And so when the actual Sergeant Skinner comes back to Springfield, the episode ends with the community ultimately rejecting the real Sergeant Skinner and bringing back this Armin Tamzarian, who they had embraced as their Principal Skinner, as a way of resetting order within the town, bringing everybody back to the role that they played, because that was of critical importance. And within the area of virtue, there's a lot in there about the interplay between Bart and Lisa, between Marge and Homer, where Bart a lot of the times has Lisa playing as his moral conscience, and the way that he evolves in each one of the shows is by learning these virtuous elements and being sort of habituated, as Aristotle would suggest, towards aspects of virtue. I mean, Bart becomes in some ways a likable character because of Lisa's virtuous influences, and the same with Marge and Homer. Conan O'Brien actually once famously said that he would have The Simpsons end with Marge sitting at the table, having Homer walk in and having Marge say, "I'm leaving you. You're a dangerous human being. You've threatened our kids too many times, and I'm leaving." Because he said ultimately the only reason why we as an audience like Homer is because Marge loves Homer. And that's really an important aspect of the show and the themes of the show itself.
Well, before we get the idea that no one else is in the studio here, let me ask Dean about Star Wars, because you wrote a chapter on Star Wars and Plato.
Yeah, it being the age that I am, kind of raised on Star Wars, and so I've seen those movies quite a bit. And now that I have children, my son has seen the movies almost as often as I have. In fact, he knows more about the Star Wars saga than I ever will. And it occurred to me that what Chancellor Palpatine was able to do was to create disorder within the Galactic Republic and create that disorder in such a way where Plato would take notice. And what Palpatine was able to do is he was able to take the three classes of society in this fictive universe and have them interact in ways in which is not harmonious. In fact, it created a lot of disorder, and Palpatine was able to take advantage of that in such a way where he was able to place himself as emperor. And clearly, it's the evil empire. That's what we all kind of call it. But the reason it's an evil empire is probably not the reason that Plato would use, because it's more about disorder and disharmony than it is about cackling emperors and evil Sith lords.
All right. Well, how about the political aspect of it? I mean, I think everyone would agree and is knowledgeable about Star Wars being a story of a story of the kind that's passed along from generation to generation. But how does it translate into political theory?
Well, the interesting connection back to Plato's political philosophy, I think, is how Lucas seems to portray the Jedi. And Plato seems to hold that the ideal state cannot work without the philosopher king. We philosophers, we like to, remind people of that. But
thank you.
You're welcome. And so it seems then that Yoda or Obi-Wan Kenobi or maybe Mace Windu should be the leader of society. But time and time again, Lucas had these people be servants to the Galactic Republic. And that kind of made me pause. And I think what Lucas is trying to say is that maybe Plato had overestimated any one individual's fortitude in terms of ruling the state. Because if you're Plato, the philosopher king will always do the right thing without fail. But Aristotle, for instance, thought that Plato was just wrong about that. Nobody was that strong. And it seems then that Lucas agrees with Aristotle on this, is that it seems that there should be a series of checks and balances in terms of political power in the state. And Plato thought, no, you just needed the philosopher king to rule in such a way where the other factions of society are pretty much kept in line, but not so. And so as I was working on this chapter, it dawned upon me that this is one way in which thinking about Star Wars can actually help us better understand not only Plato and Aristotle, but also Plato and Aristotle can better help us understand the Star Wars saga.
All right. Well, let me broaden it beyond that, which is just a commonality that I noticed reading all this, and this might be 101 to you guys. I don't know. But the idea that rule from above, or you call the philosopher king, or you talk about – well, there's an episode of The Simpsons where there's a Mensa group that decided to take over town, right? So, but that eventually they had the same problems that everyone else has when they're trying to rule, if you will. So are these common, and including the chapter on Harry Potter? I mean, the idea that ruling from above, or having a philosopher king, or having an all-knowing person, or someone that we all look to have all the answers is never really going to be the case. So in some cases, it's a avocation of people power in many of these chapters. Is that fair to say? Is that even a political philosophy that we can talk about?
One of the reasons why you do see that common theme is remember that all of these elements and artifacts that we're looking at in this book, the films, and even down to the chapter about social media and aspects of how that's altering our understanding of democracy and democratic theory. You know, these are really Western movements. These are Western artifacts, and so they're playing into the long Western tradition in which there is a rejection of centralized political authority. And when we look at the sort of long march of democracy, and in particular liberal democracy across the globe, but in particular as it's been embraced by these Western states and Western political cultures, these films speak to those elements. As I talk about in the introduction, these are really our modern myths that are attempting to convey what we value, our norms, our what we consider to be virtues. And so in telling these stories, you are going to see those kind of common themes about government, because they're being produced and consumed by primarily and predominantly these Western political cultures that are wanting to reinforce those normative beliefs about the way that government and society should operate.
And that's one of the interesting things about studying Plato is that, of course, he came long before Western ideals of democracy. And in fact, Plato was no fan of democracy. He wanted to argue for a meritocracy where everyone in society has a distinct role to play given their natural aptitudes and abilities. And there should be some sort of social designer, some sort of architect in place that ensures that there are the producers and the guardians or the auxiliaries, and then the rulers. And if each faction is doing its job properly, then the state will be harmonious. But of course, that seems to run contrary to the ideals of democracy, where everyone has their own say and there are a great deal of latitude in what they do in their own life, where people get to vote for their own rulers. Plato thought that ultimately that led to either chaos or some sort of dictatorship, or maybe both. And so that's one of the interesting things for me in thinking about Star Wars and Plato is that you get to kind of revisit Plato's ideas about whether or not a democracy is dangerous necessarily, or if not necessarily, then what are the dangers that we need to be on the lookout for?
Are there any answers in the stories in these books or any answers in the programs that are talked about in the book?
Well, certainly each one of the political thinkers or the political traditions within the political theory canon that the authors address, each one of those thinkers and traditions is going to have their own prescriptions for the way that we ought to evaluate society. Plato had certain perspectives on the ordering of society. Aristotle offers a counter to that. We even have aspects of looking at how feminist political theorists would organize society, the prescriptions that a number of those theorists would have for how we ought to reevaluate. We have Nietzschean kind of postmodern political philosophy, and we've got then the classical liberal traditions. In each of those political programs, in each of those political theories, there are prescriptions about the way that we ought to organize our lives, the way that we ought to behave as individuals, and how we ought to engage one another as a community and as a society. But ultimately, what makes this political then is that these ideas are then broadcast on a mass level, and they're consumed by a mass culture that engages in the ongoing dialogue, the ongoing debates of those political traditions as their ideas are influenced by these stories, by these myths, and by this art.
Do you have any thoughts on whether the creators of these programs there's four already that we've talked about, Homer Simpson and J.K. Rowling of Harry Potter. I mean, do they know the power they have? Do they know that their ideas are political, or do you think that they are focused on entertainment?
We were lucky enough, we were very fortunate to have Margaret Weiss, who is the national best-selling, a New York Times best-selling author of the Dragonlance series, one of the creators of that science fiction fantasy series, an author of a number of books. And she writes in that foreword that there is an acknowledgement amongst those artists who would sit and think about what their artistry is producing. There's an acknowledgement that they are the modern storytellers, the myth makers that really are influencing the way that we think about one another and about ourselves. And so at least amongst some, there is that acknowledgement and recognition that what they do is in fact influencing the way that people think about themselves and the world around them.
What I'm wondering though is, are they aware of how their creations are either promoting or are outlining various political theories?
I think one example that works really well is Joss Whedon, and Joe and I have had the opportunity to work together looking at some of Joss Whedon's stuff. And I believe there's a Firefly chapter in Joe's third book where it seems that Whedon is working with some ideas, and he wants to weave these ideas into his art. He's still an artist. I mean, he has no bones about that. But I think he's working with some ideas about feminism, especially in the Buffy series. He's working with some ideas about virtue in the Angel series. He's working with some political ideas in Serenity and Firefly, individual liberties, and bureaucracy, and how those two seem to be opposed to one another. And so I think that there are some storytellers, Woody Allen is probably another one, that are consciously working through some of these ideas and perhaps arguably trying to put their own spin on some of these ideas. And so then in a way, they're becoming a kind of philosopher, a kind of theorist, a modern-day Socrates, somebody who's out in the marketplace. But this time the marketplace is not the agora, but rather it is it's popular media. And so I think the answer to your question is yeah.
One of my favorite quotations that I talk about when we start talking about Joss Whedon and his creative works is that he openly acknowledges that what he's doing is engaging in political discourse and that he's trying to shape social and democratic dialogue. In fact, when asked to comment about the political messages and the philosophies that were present in his popular television show, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, he said something to the effect of, if I would have called this Buffy the Lesbian Separatist and I would have introduced it as a series of lectures on PBS, nobody would have shown up to the party. But he knew consciously then that what he's doing is he's weaving into that popular culture those elements and that kind of politics to really get people to think about things in a particular way.
Do you think that the average consumer, average viewer that watches shows and likes them, are they aware that this is kind of a subsurface thing going on, that there's political theory that they're watching, or is it just entertainment for most people?
I think for most people it's entertainment, but I also believe that the internet is providing more people an outlet to share the insights that they glean from watching these shows. And so I think then what happens is there's this growing mass of viewers, of fans, who are starting to recognize not only the artistry but also the thought that's put behind the artistry. And so it seems to me that as that kind of progresses, there's going to be more and more call for the kind of work that Joe and I do in terms of integrating pop culture with classic political and philosophical ideas.
Well, you both are making me want to take some classes in this, so well done. Joseph Foy and Dean Kowalski, thank you very much for coming on.
Thank you for having us.
Joseph Foy is an associate professor of political science and an associate campus dean at UW-Waukesha. He's co-editor of the book Homer Simpson Ponders Politics, Popular Culture as Political Theory. Dean Kowalski is author of a chapter on Star Wars and Plato and is associate professor of philosophy at UW-Waukesha. They spoke with Dan Harmon, and you can hear more of the interview at wuwm.com/lakeeffect. Just a few short days of summer vacation remain for most kids in the area, but that's still plenty of time to get outside and be creative. We'll get some ideas from our outdoor adventure contributors when Lake Effect returns on WUWM.